agenda today is House Joint Resolution Number 28, which is by the Labor and Commerce Committee by request of the Subcommittee on International Trade. And Representative Davidson is here, he's the chairman of the International Trade Subcommittee, and perhaps you could address us on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Subcommittee on International Trade had a program by one David Ford. He's a Kiwi, a private entrepreneur in the multimedia. And he gave us a very convincing direction to follow some kind of program where we could get the two Pacific Rim nations of New Zealand and the state of Alaska, rather, one nation and one state, to work together for the benefit of both. And the result of his program and discussion by the committee is the resolution we have before us. And I would ask that the committee view this favorably, and that we do in fact respond to this as a resolution and encourage cooperation in trade and other kinds of things between New Zealand and Alaska.
Well, for the record, Representative Boucher is excused today, and Representative Kopman, Representative Furness, Representative Bernard, Representative Davidson, and Representative Donnelly are here. Well, I don't see any unique language in here or harsh.
Just look at anybody.
It's more an offering of goodwill and good intent, and doesn't really at this point cost anybody anything, but simply acts as an encouragement to further the cause.
Are there any members from the public here to testify on HJR 28? Seeing none, what's the will of the committee? Oh, well, the staff has a question. Oh, Representative Bernard.
It's a question. Otherwise, I was just going to move it over.
What
are your questions?
I hope not.
Yeah, they do, too.
Oh, did they?
I don't know. But I did have one. Something you said something about air transportation. Is it your hope that we would establish the link by airline between Alaska and New Zealand?
Well, that would be the ideal situation, but hopefully what we could do is encourage more travel between the two, and I don't know that it would be possible. I don't think that the traffic is there to establish a definitive link, but if we could work into such a volume, it would be a good thing.
No objection.
President Bernard?
Yes, there's no further discussion, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move this out of committee and ask for unanimous consent.
All right, is there any objection to unanimous consent? Seeing no objection, motion passes. Next matter on the calendar is House Bill 78, an act relating to the operation of farm equipment on state highways. Representative Miller, would you like to join us here at the table?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Miller is the prime sponsor of this legislation. There are just a freshly delivered fiscal notes and position paper from the Department of Transportation should have been just added to your packet. They just walked in here. And Representative Miller, would you like to address us on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Representative Mike Miller. I represent House District 18, which is the southeastern section of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, today you have before you House Bill 78, which I'm the prime sponsor of. This legislation arose out of a couple of different groups. It arose out of the Interior Farming Association, and it also arose out of the Future Farmers of America program at the North Pole High School. And what it is allowed the movement of farm equipment from one field to another without the burden of a permitting system. Following the introduction of 78, I worked with the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, Division of Major Standards and the Interior Farming Association, and the Division of Legal Service in identifying three changes that should be made in the bill. And these changes have been incorporated in the proposed committee substitute that's in each of your package. The current division of of Measure Standards Permit System does not specifically allow for the movement of farm equipment except on Saturdays and Sundays during the harvest season or in an emergency situation. Although there are general single move and 30-day multiple move permits that could cover farm equipment, Measures and Standards report there have probably not issued more than 5 or 6 permits for movements of farm equipment since July of 1982, which means that farm equipment now is being removed without permit signs or beacons at the present time and apparently without incident. And that was stated in your packet, a letter from Mr. Joe Swanson from the Weights and Standards. That was a direct quote of his. Passage of House Bill 78 would accomplish two actions. First, farmers could legally be allowed to move their equipment on the highway system with a minimum of bureaucrat interference. And secondly, the safety provisions of HB 78 would apply to moves that are currently taking place without any minimum standards as of now. The Alaska distributor of the John Deere equipment has informed me that the bulk of farm equipment sold and used in the North Pole area is no greater than 12 feet in width. And the larger pieces are primarily located in the Delta Ag area and the Point McKinsey Ag area. And my staff has also reviewed the motor vehicle laws from 18 farm states and found that 16 of these states allow exemptions for movement of farm equipment. And by that I mean most of those 16, or all those 16, do not require a permitting system. And I do have a list of those states and what they do. Now, many of these states do require some of the things that we have in this bill, which is the operation that during daylight hours and displaying a slow-moving emblem on the rear of the vehicle, displaying a red flag, and moving the farm equipment from one location to another within 50 miles of the home base. And I guess to explain how this arose, this legislation, about 3 years ago, through a legislative grant, we were able to purchase some farm equipment for the North Pole High School for the Future Farmers of America program. And I know Representative Menard is very familiar with that program that they have in the Massu area. And much of their schoolwork is done in Kramer's Field, which is approximately 15 miles away in Fairbanks. Well, when the students went to move this equipment, they found out all of a sudden they had to get a permit, and they could only move this equipment on Saturday or Sunday, which caused some problems because they wanted to move the equipment in and start some of their classwork in the field at Kramer's Field. Well, they were finally able to do all that, but after much hassle and the students themselves went down into their pockets and got the permitting fees, which are only, granted, not much, $15, but, you know, for a student organization, that's still quite a bit. But I think they're some of the few people that have got the permits, because as in the letter indicated from Mr. Swanson, that there have been very few issued in the last 4 years, which means farmers have been doing it anyway, but there has been no reports of problems. So with that, I guess I will open it up to questions. There is an individual here from the Department of Transportation, which does have a position paper against the bill, and I guess if he can explain his position with that.
Okay. Representative Copeland?
I just went to call the committee's attention to the fact that I didn't know that we had different permitting standards. I assume that the implement of something covered this one. I myself have bought an international tractor and a hay baler from North Pole and drove it all the way to Chino Ridge across town. Perfectly happily.
You have just violated the law.
I'm very careful to put the proper signs and what I'm familiar with on the back of it. But this is
we can purge that from the record.
Yes, I think there's a statute of limitations.
Mr. Chairman, is it in order to move the CS?
I haven't even had a chance. What I'd like to do is Representative Miller, maybe you could just pull up,
sure.
Join us here. Representative Boucher isn't here today. If you would like to take his chair, and then we could have the representative of the department come up, and because there are no other members of the public here to testify. Of course, you could just join us here, sir.
I haven't seen the seeds.
is
this to see this, Jim?
Yes, it is. And you can see that it's color-coded to show the changes from the original building to the proposed building substitution.
Could you introduce yourself to the committee?
For the record, I'm Bruce Springtag from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I'm involved with our maintenance operations and as well as truck regulations and utility operations. But we're here to talk about farm equipment, and also for the record, I want to note that the department is not against the bill. In fact, we're quite for the bill. The only concerns we have lay in what we perceive the department's responsibility is to the motoring public to assure that at least they have a safe way of operating on our highways, and that the rules and regulations, at least regarding slow-moving vehicles, or for that matter, wide vehicles, do not impact the normal traffic flow. And we recognize that in some areas we have some nice wide roadways with wide shoulders to a point where these vehicles that are slow moving and can't be quite wide either will be able to get off to a point where they'll allow for normal traffic flow, or at least minimal impedance of traffic flow. In a number of farming areas, unfortunately, we still have a number of narrow roadways. Usually they follow the terrain so that they have dips and doodles and a number of horizontal curves, and we're only concerned that we don't create an accident potential or an accident situation by just having the public not knowing that there may be a slow or a wide vehicle that they are coming up upon or coming against, and that they have to react in an adverse manner. And with that, we put together a position paper that only asks consideration for certain things which we perceive to be necessary for the safety of these vehicles.
Have you had the opportunity to see the proposed committee substitute?
No, I have not seen this one.
Okay, well, maybe you could follow through that. Representative Miller, could you take us through the committee substitute?
Sure. Basically, the first section is regulations of weights and loads of the vehicle. And basically, it is exempting those vehicles which fall under Section 2 of the bill, and those vehicles falling under Section 2 of the bill is farm equipment. Okay, the first change would be on line 20 in the original drafting of the bill. They made a wrong reference to the statute, so that was the only change there. The underlying 5 is the statute that they should be talking about. Okay, then what we're saying is the incidental operation of the vehicles 12 feet up to 12 feet in lift in width is authorized without a permit if it's operated only during the daylight hours. 2, displays a slow-moving vehicle emblem on the rear. 3, displays a red flag on the implement in a location that affords the greatest visibility. And 4, is moving from one farm operation to another within 50 miles of the home base. And that was at the suggestion of Mr. Swanson to put this in weights and measures. And then in Section 3, we're exempting those pieces of farm equipment from registration. Actually, no, they're not. In the first section of Section 3, and that's already in current statute, is driven or moved on the highway only for the purpose of crossing the highway from one private property for another, including the implement of husbandry as defined by regulation. So the department has already seen, or the legislature has already seen, that there could be a case where you have a field divided by a highway, and you can actually go onto the highway and cross them from one half of the field to the other half.
Art, did you want to move that we have the committee substitute before us at this time?
Yes.
Is there an objection to having the committee substitute as staff before us? I just hadn't had a chance to understand what they had to say. Representative Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the matter of daylight hours, well, first of all, I'd like to know if, in fact, anyone has been in contact with the Department of Public Safety. I understand they're the ones who are actually in charge of traffic flow, right?
There is a position from the Department of Public Safety in there. Basically, they're saying they had a problem with the word incidental operation, but they're neutral on the bill. However, if one refers to their own code, they use that word in their own code, and they admit that it's not defined in their own code either.
So then the other thing with the daylight hours, was this supposedly an hour or two before sunset, or this?
Well, that's what we had envisioned, of course, in Alaska in the summertime. It's kind of hard, you know, people driving out there at 11 o'clock at night, and depending on what month it is, you don't need headlights or not. But it's basically intended for those normal times of operation. And, you know, I've really got no problem in setting a time on that or not.
Well, the only thing, Mr. Chairman, that would concern me, I know that during dusk, that sometimes these kinds of situations can be extremely hazardous. And I was just wondering what kind of guideline we should set.
I would think, you know, change it. I would think that, legally speaking, daylight hours is usually interpreted to mean from sunrise, when the sun is above the horizon, to the point it blows. After it sets, it's dusk, but it's no longer daylight hours.
Is it, then, would it, through the chair?
I think Mr. Freitag has an explanation.
As I noted in the position paper, this is an older copy of the Commerce and Economic Development's Weights and Measures Permit Manual, but it states daylight hours for their regulations means the period from 1/2 hour before sunrise until 1/2 hour after sunset. Sunrise and sunset times as determined by the United States Naval Observatory.
There's a definitive answer. You don't get this too often, do you? Representative Company?
I would, even moving it to 1/2 hour after the Naval Observatory sunrise. I know that you're clearly in the daylight. Because when I moved the tractor, I parked it in town because I was getting late and dusk. And I didn't continue along the highway. But precisely the people you're talking about.
I mean, I would be happy to move such an amendment, but I frankly have never seen a farm implement on the road and driven that much up there, so I would prefer someone else if they think it's a problem to do that. I don't want to tell someone else how to live in Alaska, but I am concerned about the safety factor.
Are there any, Mr. Friedrich, did you have any comments now that you've had the opportunity to see the committee substitute?
Well, not really. Unfortunately, we just, like I say, just started looking it over, but I have no comments on this bill as it stands right now. I'm not quite prepared to.
I had a question about the weight controls. Is there any difficulty with the problem to the roads with the weight controls?
Well, are you asking?
Yeah, I guess I'm asking you first, and then Representative Miller would like.
My only concern is that last year we had a person in the Talkeetna area call a particular piece of equipment, a piece of farm equipment. He was moving from one farm to another, and he wanted to run up and down the park's highway during weight restrictions and and after weight restrictions, and unfortunately it was a D9 tractor. Granted, this particular piece of equipment he was planning on putting on a low boy, but it didn't have enough tires, of course, or axles to spread the load to even get by legal loads, let alone restricted loads or any weight restrictions. But he was saying, wait a minute, this is a piece of farm equipment, farm implement. It's used on my farms. And that may well be. And I personally don't know what the definition of a farm implement is. When one person claims it's used in conjunction with his farming operations. Granted, Alaska has a lot of difficult terrain, and perhaps that type of equipment is necessary for the particular farming he was doing. But the concern that the department has is, even on our gravel roads, when you come into a spring breakup situation, you have to be careful on where they're moving these pieces of equipment. And that's not saying that they'll do much farming in that spring breakup area, except they may be preparing, they may be storing their equipment at one place and preparing to get ready to open up a field and moving that equipment in preparation for doing that during a spring breakup period of time, such that if you exempt them from any regulations or restrictions concerned with the highway operations, they may have a problem. Now, I'm not saying it's happened. I don't know that it will happen. But certainly, if you open it up, perhaps they'll try to figure out a way to do it.
Representative Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in our discussions with the John Deere Company, by and large, most of the equipment is not that overweight. Or, you know, most of it is because, you know, they're getting out in the fields and the marsh and stuff, and it's a little weight, it's going to be losing some farm equipment. And but dealing the bark with the low boy and stuff, that would still come under the waste of the measure. And the statutes, or the ACC, the administrative code, said they still can amend it, the department can, to take care of those special circumstances. But even if it does now fall under that, unless that person was moving that farm equipment from one from point A to point B and there was a weight schedule in between, they're still not going to get caught, even if we, you know, even if they are violating it. So, you know, I just think it's a moot point.
Representative Copeland? I know that the bill defines a lot of implements of husbandry are not subject to the restrictions unless the implement is the load of another vehicle. In other words, in this particular case that we've given, the dozer, which I find hard to think of as a piece of farm equipment myself, but nevertheless, you know, perhaps the gentleman did define it that way, but it was in the load. One of the things about, I think, other sections prohibit the operation of studded wheels and metal, so you would be essentially restricting this to rubber-tired equipment, and rubber-tired equipment to operate in the field generally has a fairly low, well, anyway, you have broad enough tires because, frankly, you don't want to sink your tractor in the mud of a field anymore. You want to try to sink it in. They're lighter on the road by and large, if proper. But of course, you know, somebody can put everything on a low boy, you know, have his tractor and other stuff, and then the weight is concentrated on the axle to the low boy. And that is a problem, but I think the wording here.
Representative
Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a couple of other questions. One concerns a matter of liability. Do we encumber or increase the liability for the state by enacting this kind of legislation, or how have you discussed that aspect at all?
We really haven't discussed it, Cliff. However, I guess I just would like to note that there are several states, and we do have a list that do not require permitting systems now. You know, how are they handling it? And some of them are quite large states, a lot of people, and. Well, we could go to New Mexico, no permit or fee is necessary. I believe it's the same way, but so is California. They're exempt from registration, although I do not know about the permitting. I take that back on California. Arkansas, same way, no permitting.
No, but this is on all roadways, right? This has no restriction on which roadway that we can move this equipment. Is that correct?
Right. That
primary, secondary.
That is correct. But it's being done now, and the flip side of the coin, if there's an accident now, the state still could be sued because they say you have laws on the books and you're not enforcing them. Mm-hmm. Situation is still out there.
Mm-hmm. If I may follow on another question. I don't know what to say about the liability thing. If we are greatly increasing the state liability, then I think it's something we should take a look at. But if, as you say, you know,
this thing is happening now, and I don't see any increased problem with the state, then maybe it's not a problem. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, if I may, do you perceive, Representative Miller, are there going to be a lot of people doing this now, or just it won't be much increase?
No, I don't foresee any major increase. I think what it's going to do is just allow the people that are doing it, you know, now they're doing it illegally, and, you know.
Just keeps them from breaking the law.
Right, it keeps them from breaking the law or something. Or in the case of Representative Wilkins, he did it not even realizing he was breaking the law. How many people were out there? That's your limitation, I think.
Right.
Legislative community now.
I don't think it was during session, but I don't think it was in the legislature.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering in that regard, you know, is it best to put a sunset thing here, take a look at it after a couple of years, or is that not necessary either? I'm just trying to bring up these points from the aspect of being a good public servant, and I'm not trying to get nitpicky with this bill.
Sure.
I just want to ensure that we do have, in fact, the full perspective on the problem.
Mr. Freitag, in your position paper, you say that when a vehicle is over 12 feet wide, then it requires a pilot car. Is it? So this wouldn't affect that for vehicles over 12 feet?
Also, in Section 2, it says for a vehicle that is more than 12 feet wide, it has to follow the four things that a vehicle under 12 feet wide has to follow, plus it has to be preceded by a pilot car during the operation.
Okay. So I think that pretty well. When, of course, I was drafting some of the language here in our position paper.
Did you want to make any further comments about the committee substitute or identify any possible changes you'd suggest or anything along those lines?
Not at this time.
President
Copeland? For President Davidson's inquiry, I would amend line 28 on page 1, section 1, where it says operate only during daylight hours to amend it to is operated only during the time period extending from 1/2 hour after sunrise to 1/2 hour before sunset.
Sunrise is
pretty tough.
So the motion is to
strike daylight hours.
Strike daylight hours and define it as the period 1/2 hour after sunrise to 1/2 hour before sunset. Is there any objection to the motion? Same objection, the motion should, the language should be incorporated in the committee substitute. Are there any? Representative Ferris, are you?
No.
Ask you
no.
Okay. I would like to ask.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Representative Miller if, in fact, that imposed any kind of hardship on
Not the Fairbanks, Alaska during the
day. You work over 28 hours a day, like who cares?
Right. Well, what's the will of the committee? Is there any more discussion?
If there's no more discussion, Mr. Chairman, I would move the piece of legislation with individual recommendations.
I see Representative Davidson.
Well, I didn't get an answer to the matter of time. Are we? Should we just pass this without looking at it in another 3 or 4 years, or?
Well, it's up to you, folks, if you've got a motion.
Mr. Chairman, time to address that. I think, like anything, legislation, because there's a problem out there, and if we find in 2 or 3 years there's a problem out there, I'm sure, I bet that there will be people here to amend this legislation.
Yeah. Okay, well, I would then have no objection to the motion.
Okay, there's a motion to pass the bill with individual recommendations. Is there any objection to the motion?
Technical question. Is this going to be committee substitute because of the changes that we've made?
Right. It's the committee substitute. We've already adopted the proposed committee substitute here.
Okay.
with the one change proposed by Representative Copeland and one amendment. So it's, I guess the motion is to adopt the committee substitute as amended. Seeing no objection, motion passes.
Thank you,
Representative Miller. Thank you, sir. The only other thing I had to bring before the committee today was we have a draft of the happy hour legislation.
I wondered why Gary was showing up here.
Yeah. Pass it out to everybody, and everybody take a look at it. We don't have to take any action today.
I noticed you changed the sponsor on that.
You got copies of this, right? Do you want to come up and join us? Say about it?
Don't forget.
Thanks, Mike. Thank you.
These freshmen, quickly. They get smart.
They're in the area. Oh, I'm sorry.
Would you bring us all in on
the record? Representative Ellis joined this back at the beginning of House Bill 78. All right, well, we have a draft here we think incorporates the changes that we talked about last time, and then we're narrowed down considerably the amount of changes that we made or proposing in this particular piece of legislation. The highlights would be that it does change the existing law from calendar week to calendar day. And it changes on line 28, now explains that it should be knowingly encouraged, promote, or permit, instead of simply allowing it to take place without the knowledge of the licensee, still be prohibited. And then page 2, line 3, that's the paragraph that was requested to be added by MAD. And then the only additional changes on line 16, which is providing for the option to increase prices when entertainment is provided. And the drafters are still considering possible ways to define entertainment. Do you have any comments, Mr. Ryan?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Jerry Ryan, I'm Representative Char. Well, you've heard Mike Gordon's testimony. I think he would prefer the day rather than, this is basically 2 days as I read it. But knowing that everything is a world of compromise, this sure gets us closer to where he wants to be than we were before. So, but I want the committee to know, in all fairness, we'll probably be trying to work on it to get it back to the way Mike wants to get it. Whether we can ever do that or not, I don't know. This is certainly better than the way it is now. I haven't had a chance to talk to him about this, obviously. But we appreciate your courtesy and all the work that you and your staff have done. And it's sure an improvement over the present one. Senator Fisher is in town. I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to him about this, but I did this morning. I didn't get into specifics, but he agreed that there did need to be some fixes in general. So he's a resource that would be available if the committee wants to talk to him.
My intent would be to send this draft to Catherine Bigler or anybody else who's interested, and then to get some comments back before we take any particular action, unless the committee has a different opinion about it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask Mr. Reinwald to please in lay language, explain exactly what these changes do. Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, last year, when going back to the existing law, the way the law read, and this was something that was that really I think was overlooked. If you look at line 18, we're taking out the same, and then the way it would read, the same calendar week. And that is what Mike Gordon has a problem with, and he explained to you, I believe, much better than I could last week, but how that affects his operation in particular. And I think it's fair to say at this juncture, Mike is the one that's most affected of anybody that I've talked to in our organization about. Because if for example, see, I think he gives the example of a Michelob, where he gets a special, able to buy Michelob at a special price. He wants to be able to have a special price to that to run all day long, and that has been his marketing practice. Whereas the happy hours, the public policy underpinning of the happy hours bill was to stop people from drinking excessive amounts of alcohol in a short period of time, 3 hours, 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever it might be. And so that he felt changing the week to the day would still fit within the policy frame that was supposed to be the intent of the happy hours bill, but get away from this business of the week. It was just something we overlooked last year. I think we would have, had we caught it, I'm sure we would have raised an objection to it. So that, in essence, is Mike's problem. And I th- think that, you know, the organization obviously supports that position. So that speaks to that one up there. Then on the next page, the lines where the amendment, the changes start on lines 3. That's just an attempt to accommodate what was a good point raised by the attorney who reviewed the bill for Mann in trying to get at what appears to be certainly circumventing the intent of the happy hours, at least in this ordinance in Anchorage, where they were offering like Ham's beer all week long to stay within the week prohibition. They would offer Ham's beer at a certain price from 4 to 8 all week long. Well, that gets you right. That's really just a happy hour situation, only with one brand of beer. And we support this. That's just going to cause problems for everybody. And so that's what this is targeted at. Then the last change on the second page is to make plain what we think is implicit, but to make explicit the fact that if there is a band or other kinds of entertainment, that they should be able to increase their prices. The intent of happy hours is, of course, generally to get away from reducing prices to increase consumption. Again, this makes plain what may not be implicit actually in the law. This makes plain that management could increase prices from time to time, which seems to be reasonable.
Thinking of the entertainment problem, I know, for example, a lot of places have said television there, you know, special events that come up on television, or they're watching cable or something. And most places wouldn't change that policy, but it is possible that people would do that, turn off the TV, turn off the cable or something. Do we want to define it so tightly as saying musical entertainment or something like that? Because most of it usually is musical entertainment. There are some comedians, even they very
comedians. Sometimes it's comedians.
Comedians, belly dancers.
Okay. Well, they have to be accompanied by music.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Copeland, that's where we dead ended last week. I mean, I don't know how you, because maybe it's easier to define what it isn't than what it is, and we have an attorney looking at that trying to develop something that the committee could consider, but we certainly don't have any answers. Because, as you all know, when you get into definitional issues, it can get to be a real can of worms. But I don't know how you answer that problem, that point that they raised in their letter, but it is potential for abuse. We just hope that people use good sense and not do it.
How's the committee feeling about this legislation these days? We've got a few minutes here. We can still wrap this up by 2:30 or so. If we just take a few minutes and talk about
it. When do we expect to have the recommendation about entertainment from the legal people?
Well, I mean, what I did is I asked Mr. Ford, who's drafting this for us, I said, the committee asked that I ask you to think about a definition of entertainment. He said, okay, I'll think about it. So I suspect that we will get some draft language back when I call him up and say, okay, we have to have something in writing. It's obviously not going to be any easier for him than the rest of us, but it may not be that difficult to at least put something out there for the committee to have a bill in.
Even live entertainment would be better than nothing.
Live.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
you know,
pre-recorded.
As opposed to
having a walk carry on.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad act.
Yeah, right. Representative Davidson, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you asked what we thought of this legislation. I guess I really don't know now since you took your name off of it.
Are you going to send this back to MAD and get some information? At least give them an opportunity.
I'd like to get some feedback from them to bring back before the committee for everybody to think about.
The comment towards live entertainment, I'm thinking particularly of where they may have permission to screen a fight. The last one, for example, they would get permission from HBO or whatever. That may or may not be considered live entertainment, so it would prohibit them from doing those kinds of things, which is a possibility.
That's interesting.
Entertainment is probably the best generic term you could use at this point. I think Mr. Reinhorn is correct. Maybe we want to do it using the exceptions as opposed to what does not constitute, but I wouldn't get into that at this point.
Okay. Well, we'll have a window of opportunity. We're looking at some more with the drafters and get our comments back from
Yeah, I'd like to pose that question about live entertainment, because I could see where, if they had permission to show a fight, that would be a live showing, and I think that would be reasonable to have higher prices charged, or if it were, you know, a comedian there, or a juggler, or a belly dancer, or a band, or whatever. If it were the videos that are often shown in bars that are pre-recorded, or television shows, or music on a jukebox, I don't think those things would justify a raised price, but I think that may be the way to go. So if we could have the question answered that Representative Furness raised about whether live entertainment, a live broadcast of a sporting event, if that would qualify as...
Well, it would be qualified. I'm still thinking perhaps after the fact. Oftentimes on a major fight, they may not be able to show it then because it is blocked out, but several days later they may get permission to do so. This weekend, as I recall, HBO did have the last major prize fight on, and so the bars may have an exemption for which to do that. That may not be classified as a live event because it is a
live performance. Mr. Chairman, I just wonder, as a matter of policy, though, it doesn't, if the idea behind happy hours is to get away from cut rate prices to encourage consumption, I don't know, we get into this question about what difference does it make whether they raise prices. I think the concern is whether they lower prices, and whether, but somehow, and Matt's point is a good point, we don't want to give a vehicle where somebody could really bend what the definition of entertainment means to use that to backdoor into a happy hour situation. And I think that's what we were trying to get at. I think the response would be, if we're trying to get at how we regulate when they raise prices, I don't know if the committee may want to do that, but I would think you probably wouldn't want to. They're probably more concerned about the other side.
What is that, Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was, in fact, my question was that I don't think, we're really not concerned with how much they charge, but how little. So why, in fact, is number 4 in section 2 even necessary?
Mr. Chairman, there is some question, and again, perhaps as we get battle weary dealing with these issues and what the things mean and don't mean, but there's some question about whether they now can do this because of the bill that passed last year, and they would like to clarify that indeed that it was not the intent of the legislature to get into regulating raising of prices, but the policy concern was cutting prices to encourage consumption in very short periods of time. Mm-hmm.
Can you, Jerry? Can you tell us what that language was that where it created this problem as far as increasing prices?
Mr. Chairman, off the top of my head, I can't.
Well, I would just think it's the general prohibition against charging any less and on a particular day, because then you could argue that if you had any, you know, it works both ways. Increasing the price is, in effect, charging less before you increase the price. So I think that's what Matt was getting at when they were...
Well, the point to Davison, well, number four, as I recall, it's the ABC board had a certain interpretation that made this an unclear question. Could they indeed raise the price? I think when we put the prohibition that they could not lower the price, they assumed that you couldn't lower nor raise under certain kinds of circumstances. And what the group is asking, that it made perfectly clear that yes, you can, because of the increased cost during an entertainment event. So,
a lot of areas, they cover that just by allowing, you know, having the price of constant, allowing a cover charge during the period of things.
I respond to that. We had talked about that. It appears that cover charges in Alaska are not big hits. In essence, they run off trade by charging a cover price. Right? So there are too many freight stations that you can simply walk into. If you had a really named artist or whatever, perhaps you could do it. But the cover charge, bars and restaurants or whatever, free national, they don't work anymore.
Well, we'll take this and send a copy. Matt, does the committee have any suggestions, any other civic groups or organizations that might want to bring in on this process? Or
send it to Matt.
Okay.
You'll get it.
Jan, did you want to say anything?
No.
Okay. Right. Well, unless somebody else has something to bring before the committee, we'll go ahead and adjourn.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, the time's 2:30.
Bye, Tom.